This has been a tough week. I don't know about you, but I feel sad and tired. I saw on Facebook some of my fellow clergy sent missives to their congregations about Wednesday's events. I wondered whether I was supposed to do the same. But I couldn't think of anything new to say. To be honest, I struggled to think of anything new to say today. So let me begin by sharing some words from Yale history professor Timothy Snyder. He's an expert on authoritarianism and the growth of authoritarianism regimes in governments. Writing in the New York Times yesterday, Tim Snyder addressed the lie of the stolen election with these words. On the surface, a conspiracy theory makes its victim look strong. It sees Trump as resisting the Democrats, the Republicans, the deep state, the pedophiles, the Satanists. More profoundly, however, it inverts the position of the strong and the weak. Trump's focus on alleged irregularities and contested states comes down to cities where black people live and vote. At bottom, the fantasy of fraud is that of a crime committed by black people against white people. Watching white supremacists among the people storming the Capitol, it was easy to yield to the feeling that something pure had been violated. It might be better to see the episode as part of a long American argument about who deserves representation. In short, the takeover of the Capitol building has provided another particularly painful bundle of evidence of something we've talked about before, which is this. The evil of white Christian nationalism is alive and well in our nation. I'll add this, that lightly sleeping dog was easily whistled to heel by the self-serving opportunists currently occupying the White House. Considering recent events, Wednesday's march to the Capitol building was not surprising. But the extent of its success in actually occupying the building was quite surprising. Perhaps we should be used to it now, by now. For 4 years, we have been surprised less by the extremes that have been attempted and more by the degree of success. Success for which conservative Christians have helped pave the way. I'm speaking bluntly today. Maybe that's because other mainliners are doing so as well. On Friday, I opened Facebook to discover that the National Council of Churches had issued what it titled Open Letter to Vice President Pence, Members of Congress, and the Cabinet, calling for the removal of President Trump from office. Over the last 4 years, we've seen a lot of things we never thought we'd see. Add this to the list. Here's part of what that open letter said. President Donald J. Trump's actions and words have endangered the security of the country and its institutions of government by inciting a violent, deadly, seditious mob attack at the U.S. Capitol. His words and actions have placed the lives of the people he is supposed to serve in grave danger to advance his own interests. Further, he not only failed to stop or condemn the attack after the Capitol had been stormed, but instead encouraged the mob by calling them patriots. For the good of the nation, so that we might end the current horror and prepare the way for binding up the nation's wounds, we, as leaders of the member communions of the National Council of Churches of Christ in the USA, believe the time has come for the President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, to resign his position immediately. If he is unwilling to resign, we urge you to exercise the options provided by our democratic system. In addition, we recognize the need to hold responsible not only those who invaded the Capitol, but also those who supported and/or promoted the president's false claims about the election or made their own false accusations. The signers of this letter included leaders of important ecumenical partner churches, including, among others, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the United Church of Christ, the Presbyterian Church of the USA, the United Methodist Church, and the African Methodist Episcopal Church. Our own presiding bishop, Michael Curry, also signed the letter. We would rightly like to distance ourselves from the Christians who were at the Capitol on Wednesday. I can't even really imagine how they read and interpret the Gospels so as to justify their beliefs and actions. I don't really care to. Still, we shouldn't look away. If nothing else, they stand as clear, if horrible, evidence that the Christian tradition remains polluted with centuries of anti-blackness and anti-Semitism. That is an uncomfortable and inconvenient and important truth. And so is this. Any surprise I experience about events of last week or about events of the last 4 years is really just another example of my own privilege. In ways small and large, I continue to benefit from and even to perpetuate the racist systems that have harmed so many for so long. Sadness is a small price to pay for the removal of another layer of scales from my eyes. Speaking of removal of scales, this week felt rather as if the liturgical calendar had turned backward and we had returned to the apocalyptic revealing with which we edged into Advent. But no. Wednesday's violence took place on the Feast of the Epiphany, the day we observe as the first manifestation of Jesus' divinity, the one to those wise men following a star. It's a day of celebration, but that story has a terrible side. Remember, the wise men first consult with that lying King Herod, and then they subvert him. Rather than return to tell Herod Jesus' location, they leave for their own country by another road. In that way, they protect baby Jesus from Herod's murderous subsequent directive. Today, though, the first Sunday after the Epiphany is marked on the church calendar. Sorry, folks, I just lost my signal for some reason. So I'll continue. I'll pick up with the previous sentence. Today, though, the first Sunday after the Epiphany is marked in the church calendar for the observance of the baptism of the Lord. That protected baby Jesus has been able to grow into adulthood. Rather than supplying a star, God pronounces Jesus' divinity. You are my son, the beloved. With you, I am well pleased. In baptism, we are said to be reborn in Christ. This week, I thought a lot about those Christians at the Capitol whose baptism we share. Some days, I wonder whether it wouldn't be best to give up, walk away, and let those Christians have Christianity. I tried that as a young adult. But God called me back in a way so stealthy that I still don't know quite what happened. Surprises aren't all bad. Now, I'm the hired hand, but none of you has any obligation to be here today. And so it seems that God called you back too. God is reconciling and redeeming the world. God continually invites us into the mystery of God's self. The only fruitful and faithful response is to live lives of faith that we try to make ever more true to the path that Jesus laid out so very clearly. That's what Presiding Bishop Michael Curry calls the way of love. The baptism of the Lord is considered to be an especially appropriate day for holy baptism. Even if there are no baptisms, the renewal of baptismal vows may replace the Nicene Creed. And so we'll renew our baptismal vows in just a few minutes. I encourage you to spend some time today pondering those vows and the way of love into which you were anointed through baptism. You might find both consolation and encouragement, both of which we need in abundance for these tough times. We have long delayed work to do, work that really amounts to progress along that way of love, and which has the capacity to bring surprising joy. On Friday, Bishop Curry released a videotaped address to the church. In it, he holds up as an example of the way of love, the reconciliation modeled by Archbishop Desmond Tutu in South Africa. After that, he makes an ask of us. I'm going to play that video. I'm going to start where he starts to talk to us, and then I'll... I don't know why I'm cutting out today. Thought I had done some improvements on my connection, but apparently it's made it worse. So I was about to play Bishop Curry's, the last part of his video to the church today. So we're going to give that a whirl. And so he's going to have the last word. So let me get that started.
So I would ask you to do two things. I'm asking you to make a commitment, a renewed commitment, to live the way of love as Jesus has taught us, and to do it by making a commitment to go out and bless somebody. Bless somebody you disagree with. Bless somebody you agree with. But to go out and bless somebody by helping somebody along the way. Go out and bless somebody by listening to their story and their life. To go out and be an instrument of God's peace, an agent of God's love. And then I would ask you to pray. Pray for this nation, but pray with some specificity. Pray that we may have the wisdom and the courage to love. God of grace and God of glory, on thy people pour thy power. Crown thine ancient church's story. Bring her bud the glorious flower. Grant us wisdom, grant us courage for the facing of this hour. With malice toward none, with charity toward all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right. Let us strive to finish the work that we are in. Bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves and with all nations. God love you. God bless you. And may God hold us all in those almighty hands of love.